So, Rossi, are we going to Vegas?
That's a good good follow-up callback to last week. Yeah, yes, we are, Bill. We've booked a trip to Vegas.
Can you believe that?
Hold on. I didn't know we were doing.
Suns out, guns out?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to Vegas, Bill.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to be all meat-headed out. Yes. Yes, we are. Actually booked. Actually happening. Something that I think we teased the idea of this last year. A little bit under a year from now, but you had to go do like golf things, and I don't like golf, so I have a vendetta against golf. If anyone is curious, I think
it was also in Vegas too, right?
No, you went to like we were gonna go to Vegas. You went to like New Jersey.
Yeah,
that was horrible. And you were like, yeah, whatever, get paid. But yeah, so we're doing our Vegas trip. It is happening. It is real. It is spectacular. So we will be in the house for Money in the Bank. At WWE's Money in the Bank this Saturday night.
And oddly enough, you know where we were 8 years ago?
I wasn't anywhere. I was probably... Wait, 8 years ago today?
8 years ago today.
We were together?
We were together.
So that would have been...
On a Sunday night.
Oh, was it Money in the Bank?
It was.
Wait, Money in the Bank was... Oh, that made... So this was the one where the guy we'll talk about in a few minutes, John Cena, won the title.
It certainly was. I believe it's like 14th time.
Wow. I can't believe that was 8 years. Today?
Today.
That's
today.
Yeah. So we will be in Vegas this Saturday to see Money in the Bank. We were 8 years ago in Boston to see Money in the Bank.
Because it was odd. Just real quick story. I was talking with somebody from work about how I used to be a Red Sox fan because I posted about how excited I was to see Mookie Betts.
Yes.
And they were like, oh, I was actually at a wrestling event the day that he debuted. And I was like, well, I was probably at that event too. And then I went back to my Instagram and I was like, that was the one we were on Total Divas.
Yes.
Right? That was a great night.
It was. It was a fun time. That was a really fun time. And I think that's also, there's some other famous like visual of you guys because we sat separate.
Oh, well, we're sitting in front of Josh McDaniels.
That's it. And they show him.
They show him. And then like, that is the Dean Ambrose suplexing Seth Rollins off of the ladder as well.
Yes. Excellent event. Actually, really good Money in the
Fantastic,
Bank.
Fantastic, yes.
Well, if you talk to the average teenager of today and you ask them what it is about
pop culture
that they like, and the first thing they'll say is the beat.
Get yourself addicted.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Pile Driver. Get addicted to the content. I am Jason Rossi. You can follow me across all social media platforms at Jason D. Rossi. You can follow our little show here on Twitter at Pop Culture PD. No, we're not the police. Just there's so many goddamn characters. You can only fit so many. Who knows? Remember when there was only 140 characters in a tweet? I kind of missed those.
Now? 144, I believe.
No, it's 280 now.
Oh, okay, so they doubled.
And GIFs don't count towards that. So back in the day, the GIF would take away your characters. So if you only had 140 characters, you only really had like 100. And to be honest, when I see a lot of people tweet, I could use less characters. But if you follow us, it will instantly make you more gratified. With me, as always, my tag team partner right here in the podcast sphere. He can be followed across most social media platforms at BillyD2411. But he's the bad boy of Twitter, getting booted left and right. You can be followed there specifically at BillyYee2411. And if you haven't already heard, he will be in Vegas this weekend. So he's doing a blockbuster 4th of July 4 Inches of Fury sale over on his OnlyFans. Fans, which you can subscribe to by checking out Billy Big D 2411 over there on OnlyFans. He is Billy D. What's going on, man?
Hello. Yeah, too many characters on Twitter, not enough characters on USA, even though that was their slogan, where John Cena was one of those characters who we will be talking about in great length today, who I think is legitimately the greatest wrestler to ever live.
Yes. The answer there in short is yes. We'll get more into some of that conversation as we go along. If you're finding us, whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, maybe you're just stumbling along Amazon podcasts because now they're trying to like highlight different podcasts, which is a really cool feature. I don't know what Google Podcasts or iTunes does, but I appreciate Amazon. Like I literally will, because I mean, sorry, on Amazon, because that's all I listen to. They'll literally just force feed me some random podcast. Sometimes I'll just check it out. So if you are, please subscribe to us over on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I appreciate all of our listeners over in India. The two of you, appreciate you keeping us number one over there. You can check us out over on YouTube. Subscribe over there. You can search Pop Culture Pile Driver, part of the Dorkshire Gooniverse on Facebook. Merch over at TeePublic. You can get some Pop Culture Pile Driver merch, as well as That's a Chunky if you are a fan of I Think You Should Leave. And if you're not a fan of I Think You Should Leave, question yourself. At this point, just question yourself. Music, Bill, from Oh Yeah. I know they're working on some new stuff, but great summer tunes you can check out from them. Our podcast nonprofit is Frank Says Hi. You can check out – there will be a some upcoming event this summer. We're finalizing a date. It'll be some of the athletic variety, Bill. You'll probably be get the heads up before it happens. It's going to be at Lifetime Fitness in Burlington. So more info there and how you can help out. Yeah, it's going to be some cool stuff. And just do yourself a favor. Tell a friend, be a friend. Please subscribe where you can. So, Bill, you kind of mentioned it. Today we're going to be going deep into John Cena. You said the greatest wrestler that ever lived.
Yes.
It's hard to argue because I genuinely think he's a crazy person in a lot of ways, but I think most successful people are. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think he is one of the greatest people on the planet.
I do too. He's got more make-a-wishes than anyone. He follows me. Well, he followed my old account on Twitter, but he kind of follows everybody. Yeah. So, and he'll probably get a text from Coffin in about 2 minutes because I'm mentioning him right now. But when I told Coffin that, he got all horned up and he liked a bunch of his tweets and he's like, oh, he's following me now too. But he is, I think he is the greatest promo overall, like throughout his career, he's done so many incredible ones. And then when people say he does the same promo, all of a sudden the promo jumps up to another level because he's like, oh, you think I do the same promo? I'm going to throw that back in your face. He went toe to toe with The Rock on promos, talked about, you know, how he had it written down on his hand. Then he went toe to toe with Roman Reigns on a promo, be like, hey, we're in the big leagues now, kid. Let's go. So he does all of those. He does the super inspiring promos. So he's got promos to me locked.
Yeah.
He's got he never really was a heel, right? I mean, he was not Thugonomics, but they loved him. They loved him. He was more popular as the Doctor of Thugonomics than probably until later in his career as Super Cena.
Yeah. No, without a doubt. I agree.
So he's a great wrestler. It took him a while to get to me to the level of being a great wrestler. But once he was there, he had consistently great matches with everybody. And I know once you're at his level, you're facing the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
But he has some of the best matches with everybody. Like if you look at people's all-time matches for all of the greats, Cena's probably on all of their lists somewhere.
Without a doubt. To go to your point about matches, so I was listening to Busted Open Radio on Sirius XM. I listen to them quite often. I actually went to the office for the first time since March 2020. Didn't like that, Bill. Want to do
it. Awful. Hate it.
Nope.
I'm back.
That's a lot less productive and a lot more traffic. But I was listening in, and they said it would be really difficult to make a list of best John Cena matches, which we're going to do in a few moments. But the point they made is John Cena's best matches are so arguable. There's so many different variables. There's so many different things. But the opponents, most of the opponent, his opponent's best matches are with John Cena.
Oh, absolutely. AJ Styles, unless he's topped it since, I believe his best match. And that's AJ freaking Styles. His best match is with John Cena.
I'd argue against Shinsuke at that Wrestle Kingdom, but it's an argument, right?
Okay, like,
it's
but that argument. Is like 6 stars in the Tokyo Dome. Like,
yeah, that's
you know indeed. What I mean. Like,
yeah.
Even still, like, I'm with whoever said that because I agree. Every like Cesaro's best match, and we'll get to that at the time when it comes. But like, that's my favorite Cesaro match.
Oh, I think that was. We'll get through this whole thing and like how it ebbs and flows. But like, there's so many guys. If you look at their best matches in WWE, if they fought John Cena in some bigger platform, someone that's not on this list because the match wasn't outstanding. So it's not even honorable mention. Neither one's had it, and I was close. Was Rusev at WrestleMania 31?
Oh, fantastic!
But if I look at the,
it's not Rusev even his best match against Rusev.
No, I think the match before that. Yeah,
whatever the strap match or the rope match, whatever, that match was great.
Yeah,
awesome.
But that's the thing. Like, he, John Cena ups his game every time he fights, and he fights so many different opponents, and he's outstanding. But the Talker one, he's outstanding. He's also now got that thing where he's beloved again. The last 5 years, really 6-7 years since WrestleMania 31, he's really become a beloved guy again, because like you said, he was Hulk Hogan during this modern era. Hulk Hogan would have been treated the same way as John Cena, and John Cena the same way as Hulk Hogan, mm-hmm. if he switched the eras. Because they were both built to just win. And sometimes, you know what? It's actually kind of a good thing. If you really look back in the annals of his career, like him losing some of the matches that people really wanted to, there's a few you can pick out, but like, this guy's outstanding. Like he made a character about never giving up, never turning, never going, like turning your back on something. And it took literally 14 plus years to work, but no character has worked better in WWE.
No, I totally agree. I mean, we talk about the faces on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling, and I think we're pretty, you know, we'll argue maybe Vince or Ric Flair here or there, of wrestling in general, but yeah. To me, it is Hulk Hogan, Stone Cold, The Rock, and John Cena. Those are the flag bearers of your company. And the two other points I'll make really quick is, I think it's a little bit of like when you're fighting John Cena, you know, it's like when you get to play the Showtime Lakers, like, you yes. know, you've made it to the big time, whether you're AJ Styles or you're Sami Zayn, this is your moment to shine. So you're going to bring it to the table. And a lot of the times that person that you're facing will be like, all right, kid, I'll give you a match, but I'm not going to put you over in any way, shape or form. And that brings me to my other point. He is a 15-time champion.
16.
So he's going to break the record eventually.
Yeah, I would still believe that's going to happen. Yes.
So people call it, I mean, Triple H is the ultimate barrier, but people say, you know, John Cena always wins. He lost the belt 16 freaking times. That's Ric Flair legitimate level. And everybody loves Ric Flair in the business because he was never not willing to do business. And I think that's what you have to also respect about Cena. At a certain point, they knew, this guy's moving all the merch for our children. We have to put the belt on him. We have to keep the belt on him. So I don't think he was doing a lot of politicking, being like, I'm your champion. Because to me, he still has, and we'll get to a few of the matches, the most entertaining non-main event title picture thing in the last several years of wrestling in the U.S. Open Challenge, which was electric every night.
Yeah, he lifted the mid card at a point where he didn't need to. You knew. See, I think the thing that really, like, did he do politicking? I'm sure. There's stories of, like, remember Kenny Dykstra, who.
Oh, well, yeah, that was that guy. Yeah, I've heard horrible
things about him. Yeah, relationship things with a few different deep. But guess what? We're all human. We've all worked in office buildings. If you stay at one place long enough, this stuff's going to happen. And you're also younger. He talked about it in his promo. For those that don't currently watch, John Cena returned to WWE last night. A lot of great backstage promos. Got to cut like a legit promo. The one thing WWE creatively has done well is I wanted this when I was younger, but they just kind of let guys go out there and like celebrate things sometimes. Like recently the Usos celebrated 10 years in WWE. Oh. Stone Cold heels right now, but got to like thank the fans for like 10 years. I kind of liked it. And then like they segue back to being heels.
I mean, no bigger Uso fan in the world probably than like me and their parents.
Yeah.
And I think Rikishi's as big a fan as I am.
And then Randy Orton recently celebrated 20 years as well, and he got to cut a really cool promo. And these things weren't interrupted. There was nobody coming in with a chair shot, which was always like cheap heat. And a lot of people, I think, expected that with the John Cena thing last night. There's some rumors of Theory, formerly Austin Theory, going to face him at SummerSlam, allegedly. But nothing. There was some backstage stuff with them. But I don't know. It was just really cool to watch a guy just appreciate and talk about how every time you chanted Cena, it wasn't about him. It was about us. He talked about how, like, if it wasn't for the fans, if it wasn't for their reaction, them always giving him the business, good or bad, he would mean nothing. And I just thought it was a cool promo. It wasn't extremely necessary. It didn't lead to much, but it was just nice to see a guy come out there, be celebrated and walk off like, and be loved, because that's what he's become these last, like I said, like better part of 6 years. He has been beloved.
Yeah. Cause he's a little different than The Rock, who, God bless him, you know, catchphrase mm-hmm. machine. Literally one of their shows is called SmackDown because of him.
Yes.
But John Cena, I think maybe he hasn't just reached the Rock superstar level of fame, the most popular and highest grossing movie star in the world yet. But he still, I think, is very connected to wrestling, and he's coming back to get the record breaking title at some point. We all know that.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, it's such an interesting point because last year he fought for the title when he returned against Reigns at SummerSlam. And I kind of, there was rumors like day of that they might pull the trigger to do it. He's 45 though. And like, as much as like 45 today, the guy looks incredible, right? Like he,
oh, yeah, he looks as good as he ever has. And he finally got enough hair plugs where it looks pretty good.
And I think he's one of those guys that I think they could do what they did for The Rock 10 years ago and him do like a 3-4 month run with the title, maybe win it after, like, whether they want to do, they probably would do it at WrestleMania, then maybe him keep it till like SummerSlam, I mean, if he had a movie tour, having WWE look, around.
When you look at it in terms of The Rock, he is in the position to do the once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime thing that The Rock kind of did for him.
Yeah. And right? I think, you know, recently a lot of people, the big discussion right now is like, who beats Roman Reigns for the title? Because Roman Reigns has been champion for a long time. I've been saying I want Reigns to hold it till WrestleMania 40 because they've always done something special on the 10th anniversary of WrestleMania. At 10, it was Bret Hart. It was the second title, but he was crowned in big special moment. 20 was Chris Benoit. Take that for words. But it was kind of like a changing of the guard, though.
But
like
that was the night Eddie also won, and they both celebrated in the ring. They both won titles. Yeah. And so it was like it was like the passing of the guard to the smaller guys.
Yeah, to like wrestlers. And I mean that like guys that like
– legitimate, like not just –
They weren't WCW,
they were WCW guys, and they weren't your typical monster. They weren't Hogan. They weren't Andre. They weren't like
Triple H, Michaels, all the guys that have won. And then WrestleMania 30 was the rise of Daniel Bryan. I think the rise of like the fans, people, like the real fans, wanted guys like him.
Yeah, the Yes Movement.
Yep. And 40, they need to do something special. So I've been believing it's going to be Cody Rhodes. But after watching John Cena's promo and kind of predicting where WWE is going to go, they have a WrestleMania next year that we don't know where 40 is yet. I think it could be Cena winning 17 at WrestleMania 40 to make that its own kind of like special marquee, remember forever moment.
Yeah. 30 was what? New Orleans?
New Orleans. Yeah. So I'm guessing they're doing LA, which I thought they'd hold out, but they're doing that for 39. So I don't know if they're going to try to do – I don't want them to go back to New York again because that would be just a lot. Like they recently – 35 was there.
I think it'll be New York.
Yeah, it just feels like it would be, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they saved that for 50. But
I don't think they're thinking that far. Right? But yeah. Who knows? We'll see. But that could be something where John Cena does capture that, you know, and it'd be a huge moment. But we'll see. That's all projecting. That could be a match that enters into his top 11 of all time. But here comes the definitive list, Phil. We are the Pop Culture Pile Driver, and we bring you top 11s, the podcaster dozen, or as we did like 2 weeks ago, 12. And this all stemmed because I made a mistake. And hopefully I don't do one today until you tell me I did. But I'm pretty sure I did this one.
I think you actually did because when you looked at my list, I think you interpreted it wrong. What did you have Okay. My number one was one. My number one was worth 15.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. I had it right this time.
Okay.
Your one was one and your 15 was 15. Like, I get it.
No, my one was worth 15 points and my 15.
Yes. I could tell by the match. I knew that your 15th one wasn't going to be that. But anyways, we'll go into honorable mentions. We'll have some back and forth fun conversations here. But kicking off our list at number 11, I was kind of surprised this wasn't on your list, but at the same time, there's so many John Cena.
I just forgot.
And that's what can happen. Like half of your list wasn't on mine and half of my list wasn't on yours. So coming in at number 11 was not technically a wrestling match. It's a match by technical term because there was a bell that rang to start and to finish. But it is the Firefly Funhouse match against The Fiend at WrestleMania 36, a.k.a. the one that was in the PC when during the height of the pandemic in 2020.
I was just about to say, we were in pure pandemic mode. And I forget if this was the same night as the Undertaker match, or if they separated them?
I believe this was night two.
Okay, so this, once I saw that it wasn't going to be a real match, I was like, fuck this. This is dumb. I hate this. And then at the end of it, I was like, this was fucking sweet. This was awesome. Great storytelling. Probably one of the best things I had seen in WWE in a long time, besides Asuka being Asuka with no fans.
Oh, yes.
Asuka. Her in like the... was it Money in the Bank when they went through the fucking elevators? That was she was on fire. Back to John Cena, he did everything. He did the fist from the old SmackDown. He did Dr. Thugonomics. I love this match. I completely forgot. It probably would have been higher on a list, but I'm glad it's on.
Yeah, Bray Wyatt basically punned everything in his career. The theory of it was breaking down John Cena is everything he was. Mm-hmm. The building of him kind of calling him out for all the things that he wasn't, like never turning heel. So there was a rumor in 2012 during the what would lead to when Kane and him had that feud of like embracing the hate. Originally planned a Cena heel turn somewhere in there. There's some old, you can Google deep into it, like somebody from Creative released something. There was like t-shirts and different things with like a dark looking John Cena stuff. So there was supposed to be there. So that would have led to WrestleMania. That would have been 20. I think it was 28 leading to The Rock. Would that have made him a heel for that match? There was something in there, but anywho, that time frame. But outside of that, like Bray basically said how he never did that and always was trying to be the good guy. Then they punned on like 80s wrestling, how he basically was Hogan and was just built for Vince and he was all body, no moves. And then, like you said, they go back to his original match against when he debuted 20 years ago yesterday against Angle, and they did that. They did the pun on him and Nikki Bella. Like, don't forget that. He once got engaged. I was there in front of a WrestleMania crowd to get engaged from Nikki Bella. Didn't happen.
After a doubles match? After a mixed tag match?
Ms. Maurice. Which, awesome promos by Ms. Maurice leading to that as well. But that's what also makes John Cena special. This match proved it. He's the most compelling guy in the company, so you could do something like this with him. The only downgrade I would ever say about this is that it was so good, we never got another one. I thought for sure the next year it was Randy Orton versus The Fiend at the next WrestleMania, which is The Fiend's last match before his release. But I believe original plans were to do another one of these against Randy Orton.
That's fair. And you definitely could because he had the lineage, but it's better than Bugs in the Ring.
Oh, that was 33. That was also the same where Cena got engaged to Bella. But yeah, the Firefly Funhouse match, literally, you don't have to be a wrestling fan. Just watch this. It's fun. I believe it's on YouTube. It's like 8 minutes long of pure amazing storytelling. And this was the disappearance of John Cena, which there was a lot of stories that how they were going to get him out of there, which again, there was supposed to be some fun stuff with that Randy Orton match that never came about, but that will kick off our list at 11. Number 10 is versus Brock Lesnar. Will not be his last appearance on this list at SummerSlam 2015, AKA the John Cena squash match.
Yeah.
This was awesome.
It was. And like, this wasn't on my list. Again, I didn't necessarily forget about this one, but I feel like I sometimes have fatigue, not enough where it's like Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar fatigue, but like they bumped heads enough where you're like, all right.
Yeah, they have some really excellent matches. We can get to honorable mentions, but there are some that didn't make this list that I thought were almost as good. But this match here was post Brock Lesnar beating the streak. This was John Cena right after the Money in the Bank we were at that we mentioned in our open, winning the title. Brock Lesnar just buries him. And the reason I put this match high as I did, and I find it as compelling, is that we've never seen anybody win like this in WWE, really ever. There's never been a top main event match with two top talents and somebody just squashes the other one. And it made it awesome. Super watchable.
It was a longer match. It wasn't like a straight up squash though.
Well, it's a squash because John Cena really gets no offense.
No offense. But like, I think it's like a decently long match.
Yeah, I think it's like 7.5 to 8 minutes of just Lesnar beating the crap out of Cena. And the story goes, originally, this is, like I said, post-WrestleMania 30, this was supposed to be the Daniel Bryan spot. So this is how Daniel Bryan's Yes Movement run was going. They had this like pinned in. Like the whole, as much as people don't think, you know, WWE books ahead, they had Reigns for the next main event at WrestleMania and they wanted him to beat Brock. So they, once the streak was beaten, they kind of had this all planned for Daniel Bryan's health. Obviously he was out at this point, but thank God he wasn't in this match because he ended up taking one of these beatings, but much later in his career. But yeah, this is just awesome to see, and John Cena getting absolutely wiped and the crowd loving it. This is another thing, as this list goes on, some of these matches you may not like as much as the others. And from an in-ring standpoint, but the fan reaction to things is incredible. And
that's what makes 90% of all matches to me is the engagement from the crowd. And at this time, and then we'll get to a match, I believe, next, where when I watched it, I fucking hated the result. And I love the person in the ring and hated John Cena. So I get it.
Yeah, so from Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam 2015 to the main event of WrestleMania 23 versus Shawn Michaels, a match that originally was scheduled to be a back-to-back main event with Triple H, which if you didn't like what you saw here, thank God you didn't get another one of those matches. Mm. But yeah, because that was another torn pec or something from Triple H. Shawn Michaels steps in, and I think this is we have another one that's higher on the list, but for different reasons. I think this is the best John Cena WrestleMania main event match, and it rarely gets talked about enough.
It's a great match. At the time watching it live, I believe I was at your house in Everett. Yep. Yep. God, did I hate this. I hated it because I was an HBK stan like you wouldn't believe. And yeah. I was like, who is this asshole wearing green cargo shorts and making my hero tap in the middle of the ring? It was insane to me at the time, but it is a great match.
Yeah, here's a big part of first of all, yeah, visually, both of their tights, from John Cena's, you know, camo jorts to Shawn Michaels' weird DX chaps, brutal for visuals there. But the match,
the late Michaels chaps thing, the loose things.
Oh,
didn't care for it.
For me, this isn't even the best Michaels versus Cena match, but it was on both of our lists. Mm. And like I said, they just put on such a great match here. And this main event is kind of forgotten in the lineage of WrestleMania main events. It was during a really strange time, I think, for WWE, where ratings were high, tons of people were still watching, but like the internet hadn't hit the internet crowd hadn't hit like it hit like about 6-7 years later. So it's kind of just put out there. Like it's kind of like a footnote when you look back, but the two of them in ring wise are such a good match. It's John Cena power moves. And there's nobody better, you know, there's few better than Shawn Michaels in there for the selling purposes to make things feel like they really like hurt. Like he makes things look good. And he has that great comeback offense, like a super kick out of nowhere. Great near falls throughout this match. But, you know, looking back in time, it's kind of predictable that Cena would win this. But at the time, you never knew.
Absolutely, because at the time, I didn't want him to be the guy. I was, you know, mid-20s-ish, I guess, at the time. And I still wanted Michaels. I wanted Michaels to get that another signature WrestleMania win because, you know, he took the title and ran a lot throughout his career.
Just drop it.
He would just, yeah, or just keep it and then pretend he didn't drop it and then have a match about a fake belt. but I can literally remember being furious at John Cena. And if you had told me 20 years from then or whatever it was, 15 years from then, I would call him the greatest wrestler ever. I'd be like, you're crazy. Because this was even before the Cena can't wrestle chance.
No, this period was really the beginning because don't forget, he beat Triple H the year before, was still kind of like a beloved at that time.
He was rising.
Yes, and then he beats Shawn Michaels in this one where a lot of people, I think this was in Detroit if I'm not mistaken, people really wanted Shawn Michaels at this time. Like they were still like that, like don't forget, he's only a few years back, like 4 years back in the company, and people really want to see Michaels win this match. And I think that's what makes Cena compelling because he pulled out these victories against Michaels and Triple H back-to-back WrestleMania main events. And I think like while you were angry at the time, there was something really special about him winning those compared to if he had lost those matches. So yeah. It was just really good stuff.
He wasn't like vehemently, I don't think the Cena, let's go Cena sucks chance had started just yet.
Or no, they were in their infancies. Yeah. If you listen back, it's just when there was a sprinkling of booze. And that was also due to the poor booking of, from WWE standpoint, like, you know, Shawn Michaels is going to be over. If you don't make him an actual heel and you keep it in there's no reason for any. You're going to lean towards a guy that's been beloved and one of the best of all time. That brings us to number 8. Clearly the best match and maybe the most memorable match of his entire run in WWE. One of the most underrated talents now recently debuted in AEW. We'll get to him in a few. It is Cesaro during John Cena's U.S. Open Challenge, as you mentioned, Raw, June 29th, almost legitimately 7 years ago to the day. But this was Cesaro, John Cena, main event of Monday Night Raw.
This was my 2.
This was your 2, and I almost dropped my jaw. But I rewatched the match, and it's easy to see why.
It's fantastic. Because Cesaro, one of the more gifted in-ring competitors of all time, and when he goes to do that thing that everybody kind of tries to do of the completely flip out of the FU, it's flawless. It's fucking beautiful.
There's two people I think do it best, and I've watched a few of the matches to see. Seth Rollins is the best because he is his body, like the way
meant he, to do it.
It really is.
He's short enough too.
And he was, I believe, the first one to ever during this time.
Styles does a pretty good one.
Styles is good, but Styles almost is like shorter, so it almost looks like Cena guides him more. Cesaro's a freak of nature, and so I put him above Styles. Like him and Rollins are one.
He's a little too tall, so it looks a little awkward. But even still, it's impressive as
hell. He's so good. And this was just quickly. This was something where Cesaro had been around for a few years here. He had been really liked in moments. This is after WrestleMania 30 was his moment. It should have been a big thing when he won that Andre the Giant Battle Royal. We never got that run from him. He kind of looked like me at the time. He had a full scope of hair. Like he had too much weird hair going on. He didn't go full bald and had the weird beard. It was just a strange look looking back. But at this point, physically, unbelievable. He looks like a specimen during this time. And he could move so
too. Not to put JBL here, but pound for pound, the two strongest individuals maybe in company history. Just like everybody talks about how these guys would just dominate the gym. Cesaro's known for being like, he's not huge. Like he's a monster, but he's not like Mark Henry big.
No, he's ripped. Yeah,
he's ripped. Same thing with Cena. Cena is monster. Yeah, Cena's cartoonish, but he's still not even like the size of Hogan. But like they are the strongest guys, and they had an agile, out of control. Every move mattered. Every move felt big. The European uppercut, the flying European uppercut. Everything looked crisp. I think it was one of the first times John Cena busted out the Canadian Destroyer. Like everything was great. The ebb and flow of the match was perfect. And I believe Kevin Owens breaks up the tap out from Cena to make it even better. So I think this was early on too in the US Open Challenge.
It's about two and a half months in, actually.
Is it really? Okay. Either way, it's like go back and it's like I watched the full one I think 2 days ago, and then I watched like a 3 minute clip on YouTube today, just to like refresh a little bit. Either one of them, like it's crisp, clean, amazing wrestling, and it's so much fun.
It is, and that's what made it great. And also getting the main event spot, because a lot of the time during these Raws, which I believe, were they already at? Yeah, they were at 3 hours, I think, at this point. I'm not 100% sure, but around this time.
Sure.
If not, it's around there. I can't remember. It was whenever they did their 1,000. Anyway, I'm not. So they, but getting the main event spot, where usually the Cena US Challenge was like a top of the hour ratings boost. Mm-hmm. And this one, put in the main event, and again, especially against Cesaro, who had this like fandom of people that knew he could have this. And I think Cena was one. Story has, I don't know if they worked out together. I'm assuming at some point they did. I know.
Oh no, there's videos of them doing it.
Oh, okay. So I would just, because Cena, like, that's one thing that people who say Triple H grabbed people that he worked out with. Like, Cena was a major proponent for guys that, like, he would look at the gym and, like, then see in the ring and be like, okay, we need to put something special on. And that's what I think made it great. And I think it's one of those matches that, like, if you listen to like Insiders on Wrestling, it was a 2-commercial break match, which is pretty major for that time and any time really in wrestling. So John Cena versus Cesaro again, June 29, 2015, number 8, number 7, both on both of our lists, the triple threat match, Royal Rumble 2015 versus Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar. Again, maybe one of the greatest triple threat title matches of all time.
Oh, up there with HBK, Triple H, and Benoit.
Yep, WrestleMania 20.
That's probably the best one. This is probably second.
This really, the reason, like, I'm never a huge triple threat fan, like, unless there's, like, really compelling reasons for all parties to really be in it.
They're also usually of people of the same, like, type and skill set, too. That, like, both of those ones we kind of described are, like, a varying degree of, like,
people. Yeah, it's different skill sets, and this was also a great match where I think for, like, a portion of it, like, they took out Brock Lesnar. Like, they just like
Seth Rollins fucking broke his ribs.
Yeah. It would be insane. Like, I think he did a frog splash onto the announce table.
Yeah, he did the Shane O'Mac.
Yeah. It was crazy. And then, like, Cena was out of this world.
This was white pants Seth Rollins, too.
Wait, was he white pants for this? I thought he was just white pants at that SummerSlam.
I believe it was this because this was the, like, everybody watches the Royal Rumble who's like, this is like kind of how I am now.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Royal Rumble and Mania. And everybody that I knew who was out of wrestling but still watched the Rumble was like, who is Seth Rollins? And they were like, wow, Cena can wrestle now. And I was like, yep. Like, it's Black one ass. Of those, Black. Like, and like Brock Lesnar was in the match, but like he got like taken out. He legitimately, I think, broke his ribs. But this match was just, you know, like, as JR would say, it was a car wreck. Like, there was, like, this is the first time I think I saw Rollins do the Phoenix Splash, or it was like the first time he did it on a big stage. It was a spectacle. Cena did his shitty, like, I love Cena, I love his moveset, but the leg drop he does from the top rope, awful.
Oh, it's just so funny. It looks like he's like waiting to crash pad it. It also seems very dangerous.
Well, yeah, you're going to break your tailbone. It's like doing the headbutt.
Oh, God. But yeah, this match, by the way, Seth Rollins was in black pants. This is only that SummerSlam,
right?
Yeah, that's special. That's godlike Rollins at the time. But they really did just put on one of those fantastic matches. This is the rise of Rollins a few months before he cashes in. This was Cena's last. I think he earned this title match because Brock was kind of gone.
He at least still had the white streak.
Oh, the blonde was unbelievable. I need that back. I still need that back. But it was just like three of the – it's funny, like three generational talents in almost – crosshairs too, which makes this really special. Like Seth Rollins is considered now one of the best wrestlers on the planet, which this was almost 7 years ago. Then you had Brock Lesnar, who's just like kind of, and him and Cena were kind of looked at the same way for a long time, like, oh, another one of these matches, boring. But then once you recognize the actual talent these people have, it's like, holy cow. And you kind of, this all smattered together. This Brock Lesnar just coming off of squash matches, beating The Undertaker in a crap match at WrestleMania, squashing Cena. Him and Cena had a return match, which was okay, but Rollins interfered there. This month's later, he's going to then start his one of million matches versus Reigns. This is like a very, very special and outstanding match from a Royal Rumble that's completely panned because of what happens at the end when Reigns. Talk about just like being upset at the end, but that's an awesome, awesome match and the only triple threat match featured here. Sticking with Royal Rumbles, we'll rewind it back, Bill. 8 years prior to that match was a last man standing, which is maybe my least favorite stipulation match at Royal Rumble 07. It was John Cena defending the championship against Umaga.
Umaga with, what is it? Armando Alejandro Estrada?
Yep, nailed it. He was awesome. And this match right here is
brutal. It's brutal.
Somebody said, I think again on Buster Open to give credit, Bully Ray said anytime he got in the ring with Hulk Hogan, he knew, like during his TNA days, he knew he needed to bring it and like hit him hard and look like as a heel, you need to look vicious because you really probably only get one or two shots in the ring with guys like that. Clearly, that's the way Umaga felt with this match against John Cena. He takes him to task throughout this match.
It's awesome to go back and watch this. I was actually watching it a little bit on my walk earlier. I mean, Umaga he's like a more agile Rikishi. I mean, he's like the same family. He is an underrated talent at his time. And also, I think the thing about guys like Umaga, when you bill him as like the big bad, I think you need to keep him at like the intercontinental level for like 2 years because Cena's almost the same size and like they're both like behemoths, but I don't think you appreciate how big and agile Umaga is when he's with the other big guys, but it's still fucking impressive. His finisher, like the
spike,
I didn't love it. The run into the corner. I mean, that'll kill you like that. That's a great finisher.
Your face is absolutely crushed.
And they tore down literally the ring, like everything, like the everything was like he's choking them out with the ropes. Like it's amazing.
It was so well done. It was innovative at the time. And again, you just said he was a hoss. Like you had two massive dudes in clearly the crowd. This was during again that time when John Cena was kind of like, man, they were kind of looking for something new. And he was kind of the big bad heel. But this is why he is like Hulk Hogan. They built Umaga to be beat by John Cena. And that is okay when you look back in retrospective. At the time, you know, you wanted something fresh. But you really didn't want like 19 million different champions the way you think. But this match here was awesome. They just really like, I think it's like 20 some odd minutes. It has brutal, like false finishes too, where like they're just getting up. That's why I don't like wrestling is who can pin the other guy for the 3 seconds? Who can knock them down? Not like here's a 10 second count.
They did this really well though.
They did, I never liked that stipulation, but this time they really truly pulled it off. And Umaga taking the loss here, people like, oh, usually it's like, oh, now they're down the card, but actually then got into really the most talked about event at WrestleMania 23, which was him versus Bobby Lashley in the billionaire hair versus hair match.
One other quick thing about this, it's also kind of an honorable mention. I thought this was the match where John Cena threw the stairs.
No, I
know what it is now because I just looked it up and it wasn't on my list, but I do remember this. John Cena, Bray Wyatt, Payback 2014.
Yes.
I think this was also a Last Man Standing match. Go back and watch it. He throws the fucking stairs at him from outside of the ring. And he's standing, like, John Cena's in the ring with the stairs, charges and throws it at Bray Wyatt. And he eats it to the face. It's one of the craziest things I'd ever seen.
That would have been, was that Last Man Standing? So I remember Cena beat Wyatt at 30, and then Wyatt beat Cena at Extreme Rules in a cage match. So yeah, that might have been, you're right. Then that might have been
Last Man Standing. Yeah, because Wyatt did a lot of, did it twice, I think, my favorite thing in a Last Man Standing match, where he can't get up, but he rolls out of the ring to his feet.
Oh, genius. Yeah. Ring awareness. Mm-hmm. All right, so that versus Umaga is number six. Number five is versus AJ Styles, Royal Rumble 2017. We're seeing a trend here. We've got so far
Rumble matches, baby.
It's been Rumble matches. We got three in a row right here. You've had two WrestleManias, a SummerSlam, and a Raw. Spoiler ahead, we have no more free television going ahead. But this match here, so I had an AJ Styles match. For me, it was their match at SummerSlam the previous year. This match, Billy, is when John Cena defeats AJ Styles to become a 16-time world champion in a match that was just, I want to say, less than 2 weeks after the Okada versus Kenny Omega match, which a lot of people consider to be one of the greatest matches of all time. Mm-hmm. Stu said, and I know what AJ definitely was a big proponent of this, and you know him and Cena could put it together. Great clash of styles, but at the same time, so good together in the ring. This is their third match together. Final match, I believe, as well. And they just went out and put on an absolute clinic.
I mean, I only put one on the list, but both of them are fantastic matches. I just think their styles meshed really well. I think AJ Styles is probably on the Mount Rushmore of all-time wrestlers ever.
Yeah, he's got, like, modern era without a doubt. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, his style of wrestling, him, the Kenny Omegas, what now is Seth
Kenny Rollins. Kenny Omega, Michaels, and, like, whoever else you want to throw in there.
I'll just say Seth Rollins to aggravate you. But he, like, those all those guys, though, they're, like, that comparable, like, super athletic, crazy moveset. Can go like AJ Styles. I want to say now has got to be 43, 44. 42. He's got to be up there, and he still has. You can see a little bit slower, like when you saw with Edge and his return.
Yeah,
but like this again, go back 5 years, and this was a guy at the end of his. I believe this was the calendar year end of his first year, and we did a podcast on. I believe his whole first year.
Yeah.
And this was like this. He had to me still. Am I right on that? Is that the first year end? I think it is. And an outstanding. When was it 2015? Did he debut? I'm getting all confused.
I think it was 2015 or 2016, maybe actually, because I was living in Everett. I remember when he debuted at the Rumble, probably in the January 2016.
I think it was 16. So I think this was the end of his year because he had an incredible run. He had, you know, the stuff with Jericho, then he had the stuff with Reigns, which is incredible, and then he turned heel to go against Cena throughout that summer, and that kind of went off and on.
And his heel run, I think, is what makes this because he was the champ that runs the camp, like, you know, the face that runs the place. He had a great back and forth with John Cena, which made each one of these matches special. And again, this was now we're past the Cena can't wrestle, and they are going out and putting on five-star matches. Two, like, kind of juiced up looking dudes putting on an aerial assault, a physical assault. And that's the thing that I like about Cena and Styles. Styles way more can put on more of an aerial match. But the fact that Cena probably has top three matches with AJ Styles, who I think is legitimately one of the three greatest in-ring talents who's ever lived, is crazy. That speaks to how well he can work with literally anybody. Like, go back and watch any one of these matches with him. And, like, I know you love Jericho and you think Jericho's great.
I think yeah.
Pales in comparison to the matches that he had with AJ Styles.
I do agree. I think also that was the beginning of AJ at WWE, but still, there's a different.
He sandbagged. Jericho could have had a good match. He sandbagged.
So here's the thing also about this, like that the match I mentioned, Kenny Omega Okada was a Broadway. It was a 60-minute draw. Mm-hmm. I believe that one that we're speaking of. And then later they had another one where it went into extra. It just fantastic matches. The thing, I will still be honest here. I think the perfect wrestling match would be no more than about 20 to 23 minutes. I think you can tell perfect stories without getting too far. This match is 24 minutes. 24 excellent minutes. And this event, I looked back, I was kind of confused on, like, I remember Randy Orton winning. Wait, the whole entire event?
Yeah,
it's got to be around there. I don't even know. But I was also looking. Owens faced Roman Reigns earlier in the no disqualification title match. That was about 22 minutes. Was also really good. Jericho up in the cage. Like, really good stuff here. And Cena and AJ, like I said, 24 minutes in this style of match where you've seen them go at it twice on pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Two excellent matches. They topped it. Like, I still like SummerSlam because it was the first. And it, like, I didn't expect it to be as good, but this match really is.
I like this one slightly more just because, like, at that time, AJ Styles was wearing, like, the armband too. Like,
yes. The headband around the headband
his arm. Yeah. So that, I like that
was stuff. He was a great counter because he was the face of TNA while John Cena was the face of WWE. Yeah. And TNA obviously paired in comparison popularity, ratings, and everything. But he was still like, this was such a big moment, I think, for him and to have these matches. The only thing I didn't love about it, and I'll still stand by this, is Cena winning his 16th title here. He then loses it the next month. There was rumors that he agreed to do the Nikki Bella proposal angle by getting a 16th title. Again, rumors. I'm not anybody to speak to it, but I don't know. I kind of crapped out because I wanted to see AJ carry this title through till WrestleMania, for my opinion. But hey, he had a nice match with Shane McMahon. I guess that's the caveat for what it's worth. But the McMahon's like that. So AJ Styles at number five. Number four is we entered the Mount Rushmore. Not on your list.
No.
This match I think this match is really strong. And this is technically a main event that ranked higher than Michaels. Michaels and Cena was a better overall match. But this had something we never had. 1 year in the making. The night after WrestleMania 27, Cena, The Rock, lay it down for 1 year later. It's a non-title match, which I really liked. This was also once in a lifetime. Don't forget. So the reason it was once in a lifetime, Bill, is because the title wasn't on the line. But this match is really good. It's completely split the audience. It's in Miami, outdoors, the settings, the visuals. And it also started what turned into like the downward trajectory of John Cena because he couldn't win the big one. The Rock defeats him in the main event. But just that build, that feeling throughout the entire night, you're waiting for this one. This is also the night kicked off with Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus, which kicks off the Yes Move. There's a lot of like interesting transition throughout this card. But this match was just, there's all the hype, the promo packages, the like the piss and vinegar. It really made me feel as a wrestling fan, I do not know what's going to happen here because there was no title and The Rock was returning.
Yeah, good booking is always when you don't know who's going to win. Happened recently in an episode of The Boys. Like, and I thought of wrestling immediately when they showed up. I was like, okay, this guy versus this guy. They've booked this so well, I don't know who's going to win. And that's always the best way to go into a wrestling match because a lot of the times you're like, all right, Seth Rollins is winning. Or sometimes they'll be like, Seth Rollins is winning, and then it's a shock, and you're like, oh, that was unexpected and crazy, and I'm happy. But it is better, I think, to me to go in like you don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This was one of those things, and it ends with one of the more iconic shots in the history of wrestling.
Oh, when him just detracted on the ramp?
On the ramp. And like that was used in like television commercials, like, you know, like for like AT&T or some shit. Like that was like a big, like, it's one of the best shots and maybe the start of Cena's acting career, because Cena early on kind of stunk at the acting, and like obviously this is all fake or scripted, as we should say,
predetermined.
But like that shot on the ramp, you feel it. It's a great look. It's awesome.
He had the Rock beat, but he went for the people's elbow, and he did the funniest arm movements too. His arms are so close, almost like Triple H used to do when Rock was the heel. And goes off one rope, Rock nip up, hits the Rock bottom, pins him. Awesome, you know, end to the match. Awesome, just event again. All the build, they end up doing it again in the next year. Nowhere near as good of a match. Nowhere near as good of a build, and very much predictable. Cena was going to win, but this one was just fantastic. And again, there was all these, like, you know what it was? This match did the thing kind of like Hogan Warrior, where there was a lot of times where they stopped the match and just looked at each other to let the crowd go crazy. Yes. And that was what, again, the crowd.
Yeah. To me, this is one of those things where I love The Rock. I think he's a better wrestler than most people do. And I think he's a great promo. But yes, he's a lot of sizzle. And he has, you know, a lot of sizzle, no steak. He's a good amount of steak. Cena, yeah, I think early on in his career was sizzle because they gave him the bastardized people's elbow.
Oh, yeah. The shuffle.
Yeah. But he progressed so much further than that. He progressed so much further than the rap funny promos. And like The Rock did have some good real promos as well.
Oh, but yeah.
Cena got to the point where he was no longer a joke gimmick. Like, he, you know, he is a cartoonish character, but like, he had great, compelling promos. He had great wrestled matches. Like, if you do the top 10, like 11 matches of The Rock of all time, it's not like this. It's just not.
No, it's not. No, I agree with you there.
You don't have all time wrestled matches. You have very good matches with The Rock where he looks great. You don't have all time classics. Yeah.
I will stand by this, and I've said this on it before. The Attitude Era was not about the wrestling content. It was about, unless it was like crazy matches, which they did a ton of. Mm-hmm. It was really about the characters and the way that they developed. Like, you had a lot of pay-per-views with like five matches that were under 3.5 to 4 minutes because it was all just character-driven and, you know, Val Venus versus Test and like a low blow or like the women in the side. Like, it was a lot more like character and storyline, which is missing a little bit today.
Oh, yeah.
Time. And people think, oh, it's a match in like 4 minutes. They're buried. They don't get enough TV time. It's like, get over it. They're on TV. Mm-hmm. But going to where you said here, like the thing with John Cena and The Rock, I think if they were like, John Cena was very Rock-like for a long time. He had over-the-top goofy promos. He said the most ridiculous things, but he could pull it off. And I think people started to resent that about him because he wasn't The Rock. So like, look at him versus like Edge with some of the promos and the things he was saying about Lita, like horrible things you can't say today. Yeah. And
well, if you look at his, if you look at his career, he kind of transitioned WWE from the cartoon character wrestling to kind of a wrestler's, like a wrestling show. They still do ridiculous storylines, but like, course, he was in the transition of going from character driven to needing to be a guy who can carry 22-minute matches.
Yes, and he also went from the guy who was saying ridiculously offensive things all the time and letting the fans finish things when he swore to becoming a guy that is inspirational, and his promos were like how he wasn't going to feed into that or this or the company. It's just funny. He was literally like, there's Lita promos I was watching earlier because I was like, oh, I got it. He says horrendous things about her, and obviously the time, the setting, and all that. But you just, it's just funny to see that being the same guy who comes out yesterday talking about like, it's all about us, everything I said and did. It's like, oh, well, did you say those things about Lita for us? But going back to it, him, The Rock, amazing match, WrestleMania 28. Coming in at number three, you jumped this one up at the end. This match is, it's a good match.
Very good.
But the crowd is
top five crowd of all time.
It really is. It's obviously, we'll get to a match where the crowd really dominates the event.
Shirt into the crowd took six times.
It was four times, and it was Cena. This was peak Cena.
Guy wiped his ass with it and threw it back.
Cena. So it's Vince Raw Van Dam ACW One Night Stand 2006, and this was like, this is really where they just said, screw it, we're going to let Cena be, like, we're going to throw him to the wolves. They really said, like, we're not going to make anybody a heel. Rob Van Dam.
Cena wins, we riot. The greatest sign in that era.
I believe Hammerstein Ballroom.
It was the ECW one. Yeah.
So in Manhattan, these guys are, this crowd is insane. They're so close to the ring. Cena comes out. You couldn't hear a sound. The boos are so loud. And Rob Van Dam comes out to a hero's welcome with Heyman, not by his side, but Heyman like comes to do commentary for this specific match. And Cena takes off his shirt like he does before everything, throws in the crowd, it gets thrown back, picks it up. He could have just stopped there, kicked it out of the ring, picks it up, throws it to another part of the arena, gets thrown back, picks it up again, throws it, and then he wipes his ass.
It was literally the closest thing you can probably get to the Roman Coliseum that's been televised in the last 100 years.
Honestly.
It was like vitriol. Like, people were like, if you haven't seen this, just watch the intro.
Just honestly, go on YouTube. It is. Go ask on YouTube.
Bananas.
It's bananas. So friggin' crazy. And I remember watching this at the time at one of my girlfriend at the time's house.
I didn't really watch wrestling. I don't think of it. What year was this? 2006.
No, you were watching. I don't know if you were with it. No. I think you might have been. I feel like you were.
Okay.
Because it was about six of us or something down there in their basement. But the point being, it was like, it just out of this world. Mm-hmm. So much fun. Like you can, if you're what like completely like people that don't care a lot about wrestling, watching this would just suck you in because the crowd just pulls you directly and everybody wanted Rob Van Dam to win, which he eventually does. And the crowd goes absolutely bonkers, even though it's kind of under contest because Heyman counts to three, not an official, but nonetheless, it's just the match itself is good. It's not a bad match. I would never say that. Rob Van Dam is an excellent in-ring competitor. Cena was great. He took all the moves. He was starting up his, like, again, this match maybe 5-6 years later when he really dug into, like, I'm going to prove what I can do. Like, his body at this time was insane. He was so much leaner, like, which is crazy to think of John Cena, like his waist. But this match is really good. He had the pump shoes at the time. But the crowd, just the entire – any Cena move is followed by boos. Anytime Van Damme does something, complete cheers. The whole night. The
if you think you've seen, like, a crazy crowd, like, there's another match on this list that has a crazy crowd. But I still don't think it's as – it's maybe more – there's something about it that might be a little bit different, but this is the craziest crowd in wrestling.
This is the most easily we could say this, the most rabid crowd. They want to get involved and they felt like they were involved. Yeah. I've never seen a crowd that feels like they're involved in the match more than this, including the one we'll get to. But
NXT style of it is you're like, you're having fun. They're into every move. They're ooing, they're ahhing, they're doing the, hey, Bailey, won't you be my girl or whatever it is. This was like, you felt like tension.
And they were like, F you, Cena, like clearly coming through. And then when Van Dam wins the pop, because Edge comes out, spears Cena wearing like a weird biker's helmet, takes off that, reveals it's Edge. Van Dam cashes in, and we're off to the races on an unfortunate, really shallow event because of all things, he was caught with marijuana, which now people wouldn't even blink an eye at. Yep. But back then, he was like arrested, I believe, and then suspended for like 90 days. But
quick aside, do you know that he now has two girlfriends that are both like hot?
Yeah, he's living, I truly believe, his best life. He's decided he's in like
Forbes, his right is one of them.
What is it? Is it
Katie Forbes?
Is that a porn star?
Might be.
I don't know. I don't know who that is. That's more your category, but I feel like I should ask you that.
She was Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, I know that, but was she also... They're both, I believe, both women, I think, were Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, I'll do some digging.
Yeah, you watch some videos later and don't tweet about it. So now we'll get some honorable mention for our top two. I'll just quickly run through a few that I had on here that stand out to me that won't include what our main two are. But Kevin Owens' Elimination Chamber 2015, you mentioned... how he interfered in that Cesaro match. His Kevin Owens versus Cena the first time around was so good. They had a three match, I guess you call it feud, but this was the first. So good. Again, 2015 Cena, we've talked about enough. He was incredible. I also had on my list, I don't want to mention any names, Brock Lesnar Extreme Rules 2012. That's when Brock Lesnar returned. Cena winning that. What's that?
That's Chain.
Chain?
Where the Cena hits him with like the chain.
And that was also a stairs. By the way, I think Lesnar threw stairs at Cena throughout this. Brock Lesnar also does this during that match where he runs, jumps over onto the rope like he used to do for his entrance, but then like hops over the actual ropes at like the same time from the he was crazy. No reason Brock Lesnar lost this match, but hey, it is what it is. So I had that on my list as well. I talked about Styles at SummerSlam. There was a couple other Raw matches that I'll kind of include as we get into our final two. Any you would like to mention from the 9,000 US Open challenges you have?
Yeah, they're pretty much all US Open challenges. I think the first one that I have on there is the Neville one. I'm surprised you didn't have the Neville one. That was a phenomenal match.
The Neville one out of all the ones you had on here was probably the one I would say, okay, I there's two matches. One, the other one you're going to mention. I think I was like, ooh, I debated with that one. A few matches I honestly didn't remember that you had.
Sami Zayn won, the one where he breaks his arm on the way to the ring, pumping out the crowd. That match, to me, like I got chills watching that because you could tell.
He doesn't break his arm. He just tore his shoulder, but still.
He tore his shoulder, whatever it was. And then he wrestled a whole incredible match. And I remember that because like you could see, like he literally hurt himself. Pumping himself up for this match. That's how exciting.
Coming to the ring and his shoulder came out, which I heard is that's the reason they went with Kevin Owens in that feud because it was originally supposed to be Sami Zayn who, you know, gets hurt during that. And him and Sami Zayn have had this ongoing beef since.
And then two other quick ones is the Zack Ryder one, which was just awesome. That was just
fun. That was good, but it was so contrived because it was in Long Island. If you remember Entourage, the Entourage crew was there, which was awesome. But like we've always wanted Ryder. It was a little past the peak of the Ryder stuff, but he was such a good man.
But it was fun. And then I didn't even put this on my list, but I remembered it during the podcast. The one versus Seth Rollins where Seth breaks Cena's nose.
Yes, that one? Against that Raw, he had to reset his nose during the match. Oh, it was
that is such a great match.
Yeah, and then he is the one who actually beats John Cena for the U.S. title. The only other ones I wanted to mention on your list was the one against JBL at Judgment Day 05. That's one of – there's something about JBL.
Him and JBL.
But also the crazy match.
Yeah.
Cena's bleeding – and just so much blood is lost. Or at the same, few years earlier against Eddie Guerrero. And the other one I want to mention, because we don't have this man on our list, and it's one of Cena's two, probably when you think of Cena biggest feuds, we neither want to have a single match on here.
Oh, yes.
Could have been with Edge. The one I think of the most, you have again at Unforgiven. I think that is that the TLC match?
Yeah.
Okay, that one could have been. Not even in my top 15. And that is hard for me to kind of look back on.
I mean, Edge was probably the most memorable feud just because it went on for so long.
Yeah, and it was like off and on, right? It was off and on. It all started with the cash in, which made Edge a superstar.
And that's when I made my return to wrestling, and I was a rated R superstar fan.
Yes, you are still to this day rated R. And then the other one we didn't have on our list to make anything with Randy Orton. And those
I feel like that's the only one that stands out of the thousands of matches they've probably had. But
yeah. They had an Iron Man match, which was pretty strong. But again, Iron Man matches are tough.
Mm. I mean, to me, like Orton and Cena are just, you know, they're like doing a Batman Joker movie at this point. Like, you're like, yeah.
I almost want to see it again. Like, in this,
now
like,
it would probably be great. But like, when you're in the thick of it and it's like, these are the two longest running tenured babyface and heels. It's kind of getting to it's not at the tiresome point of Lesnar Reigns, but it's like,
again, I would say right now, I would love to see him one more time. We almost got it at when we were just talking about, you know, Cena won the title against AJ Styles and Randy Orton won that Rumble. And we're kind of like, are we going to get that at the main event? Obviously a lot of things change, but just would be interesting, but we'll jump into our top two. At number two is really the pinnacle of the Yes Movement. It was John Cena versus Daniel Bryan, SummerSlam 2013. This was a match allegedly set up throughout. Once the Yes Movement kind of kicked, we had WrestleMania 29. Daniel Bryan was so over. He was still part of Team Hell No. John Cena that summer fought Mark Henry with the famous pink jacket. Baby, I'm coming home. And then he slams him. That match was like purposely set up. There was a rumors that Henry was going to win that match because that got over so well. Thought he could maybe go on one more last heel run with the championship. But Daniel Bryan was handpicked by Cena. They said this is all reports. Daniel Bryan's talked about it a bunch. Cena quietly mentions when he does stuff like this. But Daniel Bryan said like he was a big reason that he got this. And if it wasn't for John Cena, wanted a match with him, wanted to see what they could do. Cena, don't forget, has like a weird bionic elbow in this match. Something, I think he had like a, I don't know if it's a blood clot or some sort of crazy, disgusting, legit softball on his elbow throughout this match. Puts on like a 26-minute match with Bryan. Bryan wins the big one.
Keeps it for about 45 seconds.
Yeah, 2 minutes maybe, as we get the cash in from Orton after Triple H, who was the special guest referee, which actually added to this match because Triple H didn't like Cena. Triple H didn't want to see somebody. This is where that B-plus player promos all started. How they didn't have this all projected to WrestleMania still is beyond me. The story was so right in front of them. But just such a good – and the Orton cash-in adds to this because, again, this was another one of those crowds where we talked about it. Let's go Cena. Cena sucks. It's had a lot of that elements, but then people slowly, as the match went on, Daniel Bryan kicking out of moves became – the hottest babyface in the planet, and it all started because of this match with John Cena.
Yeah, and like the other thing I want to mention real quick about the Let's Go Cena, Cena Sucks chance is at that time, it was so funny to listen to him because it was little kids and women, and you could hear the pitch of their voice for Let's Go Cena. And then the Cena Sucks comes out with just like, just male tones. It's pretty amazing. And I think we would probably throw Daniel Bryan in a top seven, I don't know, like all time wrestlers. Just he a might great. Be.
Yeah, he's. Great. I think top he could 10, be in that four that we talked. Yeah,
maybe that's a list we do soon. I think we should do wrestling once a month. So maybe the top 11 like in ring competitors of all time can be one.
You're gonna get me. You want to see a? I bet you our list.
I think we would need another person in because our list would be so different.
Yeah, like I, as much as I'm not a Shawn Michaels guy, he'd clearly be up there. But yeah. Daniel Bryan, modern era. It's Daniel Bryan. We mentioned Seth Rollins. I know you don't love him, but AJ Styles, Kenny Omega. But like this here was just like we talked about Cena, the way he like evolved throughout this time. And this is before the US Open Challenge. This was one of his best, just like that's like he saw Daniel Bryan and saw like a wrestler's wrestler. This is a guy that can work. This is
a performer too, though. A guy who's a great heel, a great baby face. And I think there's an interview with Chad, RIP, pick of the pod. Who said no one could ride a crowd quite like Cena to like feel it. I feel like Bryan is at that level where he knows in a match how long to wait, how long to kick, how long to do everything. And when you get those two guys, probably, you know, Cena was hurt, but like at the pinnacles of their like peak wrestling careers, it's going to be this high on the list.
Absolutely. And again, it's a SummerSlam, which kind of, I always felt it was a Randy Orton's event, but as we're doing this list, it might really be the John Cena event.
They can all be Cena events at this point. I mean, the Royal Rumble might be the Cena event.
He's won it
a bunch of times. He's won it three times.
The championship at Royal Rumble?
He's won the Royal Rumble three times.
Twice.
So he's won it twice and he's won a bunch of.
No one's won it three times.
Austin didn't win three times?
Well, he did technically by stupid standards, but in 1997, Bret Hart won that match.
They call him a three-time winner.
Yeah, there you go. He's a piece of garbage. But yeah, Daniel Bryan, again, obviously now after we'll just jump into it. Our number one, probably no doubter here, Money in the Bank 2011 versus CM Punk. I can understand people like that one. I think this might be inarguable, but the Daniel Bryan match, it might be a better wrestling match. It might be the best on the list. Literally, when I look at the list,
him and AJ, and then
Bryan, AJ, and Shawn Michaels and Cesaro are probably the best wrestling matches. But this was
everything.
And this was all storyline. So we talked about Van Damme versus Cena, which had a nice little story because going to ECW, going into the Lion's Den, and the Lion's Den being the most ridiculous crowd of all time. This here is the best big of
Chicago
crowd. Yes, in Chicago, CM Punk's hometown. CM Punk, this is, I think, 2 weeks out or a little less than from the pipe bomb. I believe it went pipe bomb, being suspended, Cena wanting him back. It was 3 weeks.
Then and another cash in looming.
Yes, right. Alberto Del Rio won it earlier in the night. But this specifically was all built. This was the beginning of where I believe wrestling became now, where – the fourth wall got broken down. Wrestlers were talking about their names outside of characters. We got the internet explosion. I did not order this event. It's one of the dumbest things I ever did. Sitting at the apartment you mentioned in Everett that I lived in prior to you. And I was just on Twitter. This was 2011, so I don't even know how long Twitter had been around. Probably within 2 years or so. Three years, maybe. But I was just scrolling on Twitter as people were updating things. And it was and insane just watching that, let alone what actually happened in the match. When Punk won, because it really made me feel like I don't know what's real and I don't know what's not. Mm-hmm. And CM Punk has said it, and it has been confirmed by sources that like he really did not re-sign with WWE till that day. Mm-hmm. And again, why? I don't know. But that...
Well, I think we all know why, because he's a Bret Hart in training.
I love him. But Bret Hart won his time. Get out of here. But the thing with this match that really stands out the most is just like CM Punk is arguably like another one of those just great, fantastic wrestlers, but he needed something like this to put him on this level. And there was nobody better than John Cena to do this with him.
Yes. And I think the thing that this does and makes it the best match is a few things, but the main thing is, we talked about the Attitude Era being storyline driven.
Yes.
And the matches were whatever sometimes. I mean, the Austin Rock ones were classics. Those were great matches. Sure. But These were, Cena was still a little bit, not green, but he wasn't what he was 4 or 5 years later. Punk, besides his elbow drop, I think is a great performer. So this had the storyline of almost like as good as any Attitude Era storyline and the wrestling to back it up. And I feel like this crowd, again, it had like the vitriol because they hated Cena. They loved Punk. So it was like a very, like, it was obviously a hometown crowd. It was just, it had everything to make a unbelievable match. The match delivered. And then even the ending, like just Punk running away from the cash-in was cool too.
The kiss blowing is still known and is still punned upon in wrestling.
It's like, as Shine would say on the Greg Hill show, which I listen to now, kiss.
Yeah, here's the only the only other thing I'll say about this, that the only thing I would take away from this match is the Vince and John Laurinaitis interferences, where like they come out says no, I'm gonna do it, and then gets hit with the go to sleep and loses. Like if they took, I understand why, but if they took that stuff out, even Vince being ringside would have been good enough. Because they try to do the Montreal screw job stuff, Cena stops. Like Cena was just doing that overly, but like I said, now we're 11 years later and it all worked out for Cena never turning heel or always being like above it and being a good guy. Make a wishes alone, we've talked about, but this match was so much fun. And today, like, I will go back and watch this match, and I'm kind of just like wanting to watch. Peacock still sucks, the big one, but at least when I am in the mood to like search and do all the work to get to a place to watch a match, this is still a good one to watch. An excellent one to watch. And again, our best, greatest John Cena match of all time. So quickly to recap, Firefly Funhouse versus The Fiend at WrestleMania 36 at 11. Brock Lesnar, SummerSlam 2015 at 10. Versus Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 23 at 9. Versus Cesaro on Monday Night Raw, June 28th, 2015 is number 8. Versus Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar, Royal Rumble 2015 is 7. Versus Umaga in a Last Man Standing match at Royal Rumble 2007 at 6. Number 5, AJ Styles, Royal Rumble 2017. Number 4, versus The Rock at WrestleMania 28, once in a lifetime. Number 3, versus Rob Van Dam at ECW One Night Stand 2006. Number 2, Daniel Bryan versus Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam 2013. And number 1, Money in the Bank 2011 versus CM Punk. I think that is, it's a hard job to pick this, but I think that's as good as you're going to find. Well, we are heading to Vegas this Sunday. We're going to start with the wrestling.
Tell me what's on the card. I have no idea.
Okay, so first off, we talked about Cesaro. Claudio Castagnoli, formerly as Cesaro, is now All Elite. Bill, he debuted at AEW New Japan Wrestling's Forbidden Door. John Moxley, formerly known as Dean Ambrose, is your interim AEW champion. Cesaro now is part of what is a new clique called the Blackpool Combat Club. So he's now in a stable with Daniel Bryan and Dean Ambrose. John Moxley. What a threesome with the head by William Regal. They're going to have a blood and guts match tomorrow night as we're recording this on AEW. I implore you to watch that. It's basically War Games. So it's going to be this new faction with Jericho versus this Blackpool Combat Club with Eddie Kingston and Santana Ortiz, formerly LAX and TNA. But it doesn't matter. This match is going to be insane. I truly believe they're going to go all out. So Cesaro in. Daniel Bryan, unfortunately, out. He's got a nagging injury like everybody else big in wrestling does now. But that's going to be, I think, really, really good. Speaking about good, you ask, in here you shall receive. Money in the Bank, the event we are going to be heading to. As of now, there's still one more qualification to come from the Money in the Bank matches, but we're going to have Bianca Belair defending her title, the Raw Women's title, against Carmella.
Okay.
Fine. Carmella.
Glad Carmella's still wrestling. I didn't know.
Yeah, she just returned, actually. Okay. You're going to have Ronda Rousey defending her SmackDown Women's title against Natalya, which should be, I think, as good of a Ronda Rousey match because her and Natalya trained together.
Okay, I saw a picture of Natalya that looked like it was Photoshopped, or does she have that much plastic surgery now?
No, that was Ronda Rousey making fun of Natalya on social media. So she made her boobs huge and her lips huge.
Either way, all right, like that's funny at least.
It was. So she, their social media game is pretty good between this feud. We're going to have the Usos defending their undisputed WWE tag team titles versus the Street Profits.
Oh, what?
I want that to be the opening match. I know it would probably be one of the two.
Oh, yeah. I think it probably will be. You start with the curtain.
No, so it'll be hot. Theory facing Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship. Could be good. It should be good. Bobby Lashley's been great. And Theory's the next guy, it feels like. Right. They did lock in your opponent, your women's Money in the Bank ladder match. You have Lacey Evans versus Alexa Bliss versus Liv Morgan versus Raquel Rodriguez versus Asuka versus Shotzi versus Becky Lynch.
That seems like a lot.
That is a lot. But my guess here.
That's how many they have in a Money in the Bank now?
Yeah, I think that was seven.
Nine?
Seven.
Oh, only seven. Okay.
I think that's how they do it now. So my guess with this, just looking at storyline, they still have the two separate belts, is either Liv Morgan, because they kind of been, I feel like Liv Morgan's kind of on the rise, but from a heel standpoint, obviously Becky Lynch would make sense. I just feel like her story goes elsewhere. I don't know if this could be a Lacey Evans. I know she's kind of a face. There's not a lot of heels in this match.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That one's actually pretty much up for grabs. And then your men's Money in the Bank, we still have a TBD on this, so I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe something on SmackDown, but you got Seth freaking Rollins, Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Almost, Sami Zayn, Riddle, and again, TBD. Who's jumping out to you there? Who are you going to pick now? Not have to stick to it yet, but.
Seth Rollins?
So the two rumors kind of out there is Seth Rollins wins this. Oh, that would be fun. Seth Rollins wins this. Then you have SummerSlam, Roman versus Brock in a last man standing.
I'm down for that.
They knock each other out. Rollins passes in and just comes in the middle of the ring and stands there.
I like that.
That would be an anticlimactic way to end this Reigns run, but it would be a really cool match, like ending.
Yeah, I mean, he's already won. Has anybody won? Punk won it twice early on, actually. So.
Yeah, he's cashed in twice. Edge is cashed in twice. Miz is cashed in twice.
Edge might have had the best one. No, Rollins has the best one, but Edge is
Rollins does, but Edge is right. Yeah, and then the other rumor is Drew McIntyre wins this. They're having that Clash at the Castle, which is the first UK pay per view. He tells Roman, "I want you there." I kind of like that.
I might throw up in my mouth a little with that.
Oh, I love Drew. I want Drew to have all the things. Mm-hmm. I'm a big Drew guy. I want his sword in my mouth. And then Bill. Outside of that, there's your wrestling stuff. So. This week, also while we're in said Vegas for watching that event, Stranger Things Volume 2 of Season 4 is coming out. Two episodes. I believe it's over 3 hours of content.
I think it's almost four. I think they're like almost pushing two each of them.
While we talk about this, I'm going to look that up for sure. But what do you – three things. So I've been watching a ton of videos, predictions, all these things. But what are three things you want to see? We can go back and forth on this, or you can just give us your three that you want to see happen in this final two episodes of season four.
All right. So number one, death. So I love Hopper, but I believe he should be dead. And the storyline from Russia, it's fine. Whatever. Obviously, there's going to be some spoilers here. I love everybody involved there. I love Joyce. I love the crazy guy, the ball guy. But like, I don't need that in my life along with the basketball storyline. I think you can tell the story fine without either one of those things. But I will say someone of those people, Hopper or Joyce, needs to sacrifice themselves to save somebody. Because like the show has had some deaths, but no main character ever bites one. And I think that would raise the stakes. So I'm hoping it happens kind of early on in one of the first episodes, in the first episode.
So do you believe – so we saw that weird clip. It's like – I don't know if it's the mind flare or something's there in Russia with them. Do you – so you think one of them has to sacrifice themselves for what?
I would like to see it just to like get everybody out. Kind of like Hopper did originally.
Out of Russia.
Or out of Russia, or like he winds up – he has to save 11 or maybe even 11 dies saving him. Something along that ilk. Somebody needs to bite it. Because it is a great show, but I always feel kind of safe. Even when Sam was up in the air, I was like, she's not dying. Like, Billy was, I think, the biggest character they ever killed. The only person
that Bob.
Yeah, I think Billy was bigger than Bob.
Probably. Because he lasted two seasons.
They went and opened a roast beef place in Melrose.
Just so you know, the episode 8 entitled Papa will run 1 hour, 25 minutes. And then episode 9, the finale, is called The Piggyback. 2 hours and 19 minutes.
Let's go.
Yeah, so that is going. We are.
I think we talked about it. Like, the show is back. People were out on it. Like,
Matt. Oh, yeah.
I was out. I think Goo was out on it a little bit, too. And even, like, the Jork Boys. It is back.
Back. It is. This is so good. I wish there was more time to anticipate it. I will say that. Yeah. So, all right, one thing you want to see death for me. This is like one thing I want to see. I think I want to see something major with Will. Like, I think the Will character, we know we're going to get the reveal of this painting, right? Like, which more than likely is something to do with like him and his friendship. I think
it's going to be romantic with Michael.
See, I don't think it's going to be romantic. I don't know if they can go there. I just think it's going to be like when Mike saved him, if you remember during the, I think it was season 2 when he was present in our world, but he was still under the mind flare. Like, he said to him, like, the day we met, like, blah, 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 like they went through that. So I think it's going to be something like the, you saved me, kind of like, and now because they were separated again throughout this, whatever it was, year. And he was thinking of Mike, thinking of his friendships and lost touch with his friends. This was the, you know, late 80s. So there wasn't like cell phones and the internet. So I think there'll be something revealed there, but I think there's going to be something with Vecna and Will where he's going to play some form of massive role, whether that means he kind of, you said, in the sacrifice realm, like clearly Vecna took him or the mind, whatever we're going to find out between that, like he needs to play a massive role in this. And like, why him? Why did this all happen? He kind of sparked everything. We got the backstory to Eleven the moments before we saw her in season 1. And some reason they took, when that gate was open, Will was the person of attack. So there's going to be some sort of connection there. And I think whether Will has to quote unquote sacrifice himself, or he just either is the human version of Vecna come back, or I don't know, something with him I think will be major. And I want to see it. I want Will to play a big role because he's the only one who's naturally aged and looks like a normal person.
Okay, so my other thing is I would like to see Jonathan get dumped hardcore.
Oh.
Hardcore, that kid sucks.
Hold on. In the middle of what they're going through, somehow they're going to break up. I like this.
Oh, they will,
like,
because they're setting up the Steve full redemption to get back with Nancy. I think Steve has one of the best arcs we've seen in recent television, because he starts off as the dickhead bully. Yep. He is the villain, and he's a hateable villain in season. You don't like him. And now he's like, I don't want to be the babysitter. And he's like the great, like him and Dustin are the best like dynamic duo in TV.
So just a teaser ahead, next week, I don't know when we're going to do it because we have to see these episodes, but we're going to do a seasons 1 through 4 Stranger Things character tier. And the two you just mentioned, I think, are going to be whatever our top
tier. I wanted to call the top tier Dustin and Steve.
Honestly, and I think there's one other person that has it throughout the 4 seasons combined.
Potential.
But we'll talk about that next week. But I'm so scared, Bill, and this is – I don't want to see Steve die. I don't want to see
that. I do, because, like, killing characters. No. Game of Thrones, when it was throwing their fastball, killing characters. My favorite
book of all time. But this is a different show.
I want to name my firstborn. I don't want a firstborn son. I only want girls. I'm many steps away anyways. But if I were to have a boy, I am the third. I'm William Xavier Delaney the third. I would not name my son William. I would name him Phineas because he dies in my favorite book.
Oh, God.
Like, kill your characters. They live on forever. It's a great way of doing it. If Steve, sacrifices himself for Dustin, you know what? That's my third thing. Steve sacrificing himself
for Dustin.
Let's do it.
I don't want Steve to die. I think he's too, like, I truly believe that would be such a monumental shift, but I know we're going to a final season and this season's been so good that I could see it. Cause there's going to be that we're going to have an Infinity War. And so he'll be my third thing. We're getting an Infinity War. Like, I want an Infinity War style ending where the bad guy does something triumphant. I don't know if that means Eleven is killed. Cause like, what's the end game of the show? Like,
I mean, Eleven,
I don't think Eleven survived the whole thing. I don't think she's.
I think like her power basically is, maybe it's revamped a little bit where she doesn't get like the bloody nose, but her power basically kills her a little bit when she does it, especially
I'm wondering
if she closed the portal, she almost died. So
yes, I don't think it's gonna happen here, but I think
self-sac, like, if you like the new way of doing content is completely different in old, like, timey literature, not even old, like 200 years ago relatively speaking, everyone fucking died. Your heroes died, all of them, for the most part.
Like, a lot of writers
use that.
Yeah, like, thank you. And then you die. Vince McMahon, life sucks, and then you die. I just think that, like, I want to see, like, I don't – like, I'm a big fan of heroes winning. Call me cliche, call me whatever you want. I like when the good guys win.
Die.
I know, but I just – Like in Endgame, right? Like all the good guys won, but people died, and it was sad, and I didn't like that.
The biggest hero died. That's why it was a great movie that's going to be remembered forever.
What about Iron Man? Oh, yeah. I always think of Captain America as the biggest hero. I'm just kidding. But the thing is that I just wonder what this show's true endgame is. This season's so good and so compelling. Like, there's so much Vecna, Mind Flayer. Did when Eleven did that, was that the beginning of the Upside Down, or was the Upside Down there forever? Why is it stuck in 1983? They did so much. They did more compelling things in this seven episode arc that makes me really interested to see what's about to happen. But I don't feel we're going to get a nice rosy ending here to lead to a probably more, whether it's self-sacrifice, whatever's going to happen, there will be death. There's already been confirmation. Will was on like Jimmy Fallon saying there's going to be death. And I'm like, oh, it just makes me, I get anxious because like, I don't want anybody, like, I couldn't tell you a character.
Stakes, though. That means they're stakes.
I know it does, but I'm just thinking, like, what character can die that will make me not get emotional? And I can't think.
No, that's the point of having people.
I know, Bill, but this is why I love the way I am a little bit, and this is a weird way to say it, because I get so invested in things, just like in wrestling, just like I'm going to be super emotional. If Steve dies, I'm going to lose my mind. If, like, Dustin dies, I could actually in an odd way see it, but I don't know why. Like, reason one of those characters is going to die because they need to monumentally shift the friend group. Yeah. That's why I think one of those, like, if Max dies, obviously I don't want that to happen, but I don't think that does that. I don't think it's got to be
you're
one of
playing,
the four.
Like, that's my thing. Like, when you kill somebody of importance, you're now, it's like, you know, the set, you're playing for keeps now. Like, it's fuck any, like, that's why Game of Thrones was so crazy, because they killed one of the big, like, the best characters in the season one finale. You're like, what the fuck just happened?
And what that did, and when you really, to go to your point, obviously, you know, from your college education, like, what that does storytelling was, it, all the star kids then immediately became adults. But then they immediately and it forced, like, someone like Arya, who was, I believe, to only be, like, how old was she supposed to be? If that, like 10, 11, 12, and she becomes one of the most biggest badasses throughout her arc of her story. And then what she does, obviously, with the, what are they called? I don't remember what the frozen people are called. Yeah, like, that was so weird. But, like, she's the one who, like, her redemption story plays out through all that. And, like, those major deaths do that to people. And that's where I think I could see where one of these is going to happen. I just, personally, it's going to crush me. I know I'm going to be so upset when this is over. Because this is such hype. These last two episodes, I wish it was still like a month away. Give me more time.
All right. Well, I have something, and here we go. I forget. Do you watch The Boys?
I've never seen an episode.
Holy shit, Rossi. So this season has been banana land crazy. And I was on News Dump, as Goo would say, yesterday. And we talked a little bit about the all-time greatest fight scenes in the history of anything. I've watched this now four times. The last episode, the most current episode of The Boys, has the greatest fight scene in the history of anything.
And I've heard.
Maybe Hyperbilly. It lasts about as long as a romp in the sheets with me, like, and a good one at that, like 2 to 3 minutes. It is spectacular. It is well done. It has everything you want. And to go to your point a little bit about Endgame, where it's just a massive toy dump, this isn't mano a mano, but it's 1v2, then 1v. It starts 1v1, then 1v2, then 1v3. And it is so well done. Like, you are excited, and it's the thing I talked about. When one character lands to face the other character, you're like, they've booked this so well, I don't know who the fuck is going to win. And it's even better than you could have imagined. It's so good.
And this is that Herogasm episode, right?
It was, and the funny thing is, like, the first episode of season 3 has the craziest thing you'll ever see on TV, ever.
Really?
So, yes, sex-wise, too. And then, like, they call this episode Herogasm. And, like, the stuff that they do in this is pretty crazy. But, like, it pales in comparison to one. And you're, like, halfway through the episode, you're like, this is good. It's not great. And then the fight happens. You're like, this is fucking Pants Tent City, whatever you want to call it. 6 stones, 11 fucking stars, whatever. Like, 8 pineapples. This is amazing.
The one I heard about, like, I'm listening to Dork last week, and they talked Harry, I didn't watch the season yet, but I listened to everything before, like I do weekly, is that they, Keith said that this is like a big thing where like they all go to like an island to have like the sex. Is that what the story is?
No, they kind of worked it into the current storyline where it's at like a, I don't know what you would call it, like who's like a shitty 90s band that would have like opened for Oasis.
I don't want to say this. Well, so you can go Supersonic, we'll say Semisonic.
Okay, so like Supersonic has a sex party that like Liam would show up to. Like not like super popular people, but like somebody who's feeling down about himself who used to be a star would like find his way into. It's like the lower level like superheroes that are there. But like every once in a while you'll get like, you know, a John Lennon showing up being like, oh, all right, I guess this is kind of big time. So like, it's like they don't directly rip from the book, but they make it work within the storyline, which I think is kind of genius anyway. So it's not about the hero gasm. It's all about the fight. And the fight is legitimately crazy.
All right. Boys is one of those shows that everyone has told me. I know. We'll see. Maybe one day. Let's just wrap it up here with what's going on with our other friends and their puppies.
Shared Gooniverse.
So, I believe Dork did, was it Barry?
This week they did, I didn't actually fill it in. No, they were doing, crap. Okay. That was last, no, Barry was last week.
Okay.
They did a show. They did a big old program. That's it was another TV show. It was another show or something.
I'm sure they played not Whose Line Is It Anyway? Should I Have Bought This?
They did a bunch of good stuff. They played a bunch of clips. They made fun of people, and they claimed they're nice guys.
Oh, Norwegian Troll. I saw that pop up as well. But the 1989 classic Aliens, Ant-Man and the Wasp, that was done by the people who also talk about hockey equipment, CMM, TLDR, Talked Books. I've Heard It Both Ways is in a Murderer's Row stretch of psych episodes right now, so be tuned into that. And then the streamers are Shime Time and Dr. Joe. They are on Twitch. And then the Dork Boys are over on the YouTubes.
Here's just a random one. If you had to pick another, like a DSG, another like whether it's a show or like a one-off topic podcast, what would it be and who do you think should be involved?
Like psych?
Sure, no, yeah, like you guys made, I've Heard It Both Ways. Is there another, remember we used to have a MCU watch TV show podcast, but I don't know if those guys just hate each other or something.
So I think Goo actually asked me at trivia what would be Joe and I's next show. And I said, I hope he likes Breaking Bad because I do like rewatching Breaking Bad. It is a little heavy. I don't know if I could definitely do it every week, but I wouldn't be able to watch it. Like I watched some of the psych episodes within 1 week, 7 or 8 times. I don't think Jesus I could do that God. With like, I have it. I actually watch it while I work. I do a lot of graphics, but either way, we joke about Resilient Isles, but I think it would have to be something that I think is spectacular television. So something like that I could do with maybe like, I think Mac likes it.
Yeah. It makes me think of just like, I wonder who else likes certain shows. Cause like, obviously there's a lot of like comic book stuff for me. Like I would love to do like, I don't think I do it weekly necessarily, but like I could do like a Smallville podcast, like shows watch like that or like the OC or like stuff like that. I feel like for you, depending on
me, Fryer and Goo could do the Harley Quinn animated show. And that would probably be popular.
It actually, well, the thing is, at the end of the day, it's like, fine, like, you could do The Office, right? But I feel like there's an overslot. There's a million of those. You could probably find, like, Seinfeld. I bet you there's a bunch of those. But I still think you guys could do it well. It all just comes down to, like, I don't know, something kind of fun. I'm just curious, like, who else? I'm trying to think of, like, other show ones that you can go episode by episode weekly. Like, I feel like The Sopranos, but I think there's a bunch of those, too. I'm just thinking, like, really popular show, like The Wire, I'm sure Keith.
Me and Doc could do Archer.
Archer, yep. Is that show still like a thing?
I think they stopped after like season 8 or 9. They just like kind of did like side stuff, but like seasons 1 through 4 are ridiculous.
Nonstop, amazing. Yeah. Once they did the noir one, once they really moved to FXX, when they did that to that and Always Sunny, it really screwed everything up. Still great shows, but they weren't as,
as rewatchable either.
Yeah, and you don't see them as often. Like you don't feel, I don't feel like the promotion around them, but. Probably on Hulu. But anyways, that'll do it for us. We will be back next week with that tier of Stranger Things. We will be in Vegas probably tweeting and sending pictures because the only time you tweet and send pictures of things is when you're on vacation. There'll be a lot of selfies, a lot of 2 a.m. things, and we'll probably just make some random phone calls to people as well. We'll have a lot of fun. But yes, we'll be back. Stranger Things Season 4 tier list. I'll create it prior to so people can fill those out. If you made it through this entire podcast, my hat is off to you, but we appreciate you. 5-star review would do us wonders. Appreciate you listening. Have a fantastic week. Be a good person. Be a friend. Tell a friend about the show. And Bill, any final words for our fine folks?
Slap it on the biscuit.
Frank says hi.